Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And welcome back to Overnight America. Here we are for another hour. And yeah, you heard with Alex Degman there, they led off with the story about Pamela Hupp. What a crazy story that is. So if you were trying to recall the story, and I'll give you just a quick little summary and a rundown of what was going down there. So there was a conviction for a murder that a man did not commit. It was actually Pam Hupp. And there was a portion of this murder, too, where she tried to orchestrate it to make it sound like, through these 911 calls, that she was going to be a victim in some sort, right? It's such a strange, strange story. It's one that, if you wanted to go look it up, you can. But while she was grooming people that she was planning on using as part of this elaborate plan to murder them, there was one person that was actually picked up before she found her victim. And that person was Carol Alford. Now, Carol was highlighted on Fox 2 earlier tonight, and they did a story on her because they talked about what went into her being groomed for this. So 6 days before Pam Hupp shot and killed Lewis Gumpenberger, she drove to an O'Fallon, Missouri trailer park. And this was all caught on camera because Carol Alford had a security camera installed on her property. So what you see is Alford on her front porch, and you saw this SUV drive by. I think it was a Jeep Grand Cherokee. And then it drives back, and that's where the funny business starts. And this is where I started yelling at my TV. I was yelling at my TV because I feel like Carol Alford may be the luckiest person in all of this region. You know that dude that went to Las Vegas, spent $400 on the St. Louis Blues when they were in last place, then they win the Stanley Cup, and he is $100,000 richer. You know that guy? She is luckier than that guy based on the actions she took and how easily that could have went the other way. So let's let her tell the story. And this was an exclusive for Fox 2.
August 10th, 2016. Carol Alford was on the porch with her dog when Pam Hupp drove by. It was captured on this surveillance video.
She waved. I was like, okay. Waved, you know, thought maybe she was new in the neighborhood, and she drove down the street, came back, and she just pulled up behind my driveway, and she just sat there and she was just staring at me.
Alford remembers bizarre questions, starting with, do you babysit? And ending with an offer to make $1,000 if she'd go with Pam to do a 911 segment for the show Dateline.
If I help her, I can't bring my keys, my cigarettes, my cell phone, or my wallet because the producer does not like clutter.
Alford took her dog inside and grabbed two knives.
So I put a folding pocket knife up this sleeve and a kitchen knife in the front because I'm getting ready to get into a stranger's car.
Okay. You're thinking to yourself, you're at a trailer park. Someone you don't know comes up and says, hey, do you want $1,000? Hop in my car. We're going to go. Tell me that's not the equivalent of a dude in a van with no windows pulling up and offering candy to a child. That's exactly what happened. But she's a grown adult and she should know better. She should know better that she shouldn't be getting into these situations. Are you kidding? Like, I think about this. She's married. She lives in this trailer park or wherever. I'm thinking, wait a minute. What would I do if I found out someone pulled up to my house and lured my wife outside of the house down the driveway and said, hey, get into the car. I'll give you $1,000. I need your help, but you can't bring anything with you. But don't tell anyone. Just come on in. And my wife got in the car. I would be furious. I'd say, honey, what were you thinking? Why would you do this? Luckily, she wasn't the one that was murdered. She's here to tell the story. And she... Let me continue. Here's more from Fox 2.
Alford did not even have shoes on when she got in Hupp's car.
Yeah, I was this close to her, rubbing elbows. I had the one hand in my pocket, like, on the handle, because if I had to, I was coming out this way with it.
As Hupp talked about where they'd be shooting the news segment, Alford's gut told her the knives were not enough protection.
Something.
See, I don't know. So you figure that out after you were in the car. I know there's moments in your life where you've committed and you start to do something and then you immediately realize it's a mistake. It never should have gone that far. Well, she's in the car. She's got knives concealed. She's got these things in there. And then she realizes, oh boy.
Thinking to myself right about now, best excuse I can come up with to get out of this car.
How about let me out of this car right now? Or how about you just open up the door and hop out?
Get to about here, and that's when I told her that, you know, I gotta go back and get some shoes, lock my door.
Yeah, she's not even wearing shoes. She walks out there barefoot and gets into a stranger's car. What? So she thought to get knives in case she needed them, but nah, no shoes.
Because of my husband's dog, whatever. Right here is where she turned around at and took me back to my house. She started to get out of her car, and as she leaned forward, she looked up and kind of leaned back in her car. She's like, you have cameras on your house. And I'm like, not only do I have cameras on my house, but I know how to dial 911, and I have a knife in my pocket.
I don't know if I believe that. I feel like if you are, this is so mean to say because she is a victim. She's someone that was being groomed to be murdered. But if you are that willing to hop into a stranger's car that you know is dangerous because you thought to grab a knife, I feel like this is like afterthoughts that you're pretending you said these things. You ever have those moments where you're in public or whatever and you come up with something really sassy or smart to say long after the fact? Like, it's the end of the night, you're laying in bed, and you're like, oh, I wish I would have said this. Or you're in the shower, and you have that shower thought, like, oh, I should have mentioned this when I was over there that one time. It could have been years ago you think about these. I feel like she's adding these details after the fact. Because if you're thinking that way, how could you hop in that car? One more from Fox 2, who was riding along with Carol Alford. She's the one that Pam Hupp, who just now has found out that she'll spend life in prison after a plea agreement after a 2011 homicide where she murdered a man to distract from another investigation. She was the one that was going to be the victim, Carol Alford.
Knowing what I know now, that me getting in her car that day and trying to see what play out and figure out what she was up to helped put her behind bars for Lewis's murder. I'm glad for that, and I wouldn't do anything any differently.
She fears.
Wait, you wouldn't do anything any. So you're telling me that if you could do this all over again, you would still get into her car? You would still get in. No. Come on now.
Helped put her behind bars for Lewis's murder. I'm glad for that, and I wouldn't do anything any differently.
Oh, no, it worked out this one time, and your life was spared. You are the luckiest person in the area because this was all destined to play out if you wouldn't have hopped out when you did. And what a sad, sad state of events that would be. And no, don't say you would put yourself in that danger again. No.
She fears Hupp might have gotten away with killing her because of where Hupp said they were driving.
She said, we rented a house over behind the shops in Lake St. Louis.
She found out later Hupp was referring to this house. It's Russ Faria's mom's. Prosecutors told Alford what Hupp had in store.
That she was going to have me make a false 911 call to the cops and implicate Russ in my death and leave me dead in his parents' front yard where he was apparently living at the time.
And you would do it over again?
It was hard to breathe.
Yeah, you'd do it over again. That's what you just said.
To think I was supposed to be laying in that yard dead?
It's terrible. Why would you say you'd do it over again? This drives me crazy. Please. Do we have to have these talks? We have these talks with our kids. You don't talk to strangers. You don't hop into cars with strangers. Someone comes up and says, oh, I need to help. I lost my puppy. Will you help me find him? You don't get in their car. Someone says, oh, I have some candy. Do you want to get in here? You don't get in the car. You don't do these things. You don't. Do we have to have these talks with adults again, too? Grown adults. Man. So that was on Fox 2. You can go check it out. And we also have an article up at KMOX.com that talks about Pamela Hupp will be spending life in prison after the plea agreement where she orchestrated that murder. And man, what a sad, sad story. This is Overnight America, KMOX. Welcome back to Overnight America. Just a couple of things to get to. Guess whose birthday it is today? I hate doing these things. I will skim through the Today in History, but it's such a lazy thing to do in any radio format, not just talk radio, but any radio format. If I'm listening to a music station and they're running down today in history and birthdays and things, I'm automatically thinking, well, they didn't want to prepare for their show. But I'll at least mention this one. John Goodman. Happy birthday to St. Louis native John Goodman. The actor turned 67 years old today on June 20th. That's kind of cool. Of course, Dan Connor, Roseanne, he's been in a bunch of different movies. Well-respected in the acting realm. He continues to come back to St. Louis. You hear his voice all over the place. He'll voice commercials. I hear his voice all the time when we go to the zoo in the Sea Lion show, so he's the voice of that, too. He does these tourism commercials for St. Louis. You've seen some of them. We even played some of them. It's cool to see that. It really is. So I hop over, and I see this on Today in History, and they always have, like, a little clip for the people's birthdays or whatever. And they try to include certain things. Like, for example, here's the clip they include for Lionel Richie, who also has a birthday today. All right, so you get a little music clip of him. You know, so it goes on for about 20 seconds. Here's one that they have for Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys. You know, this goes on for about 20 seconds where they play a little clip of one of his songs and... a great song. All right, so you get the idea. So they play that. And then this is what they give to John Goodman. Here's the clip they decide to play to celebrate his birthday.
Your coffee?
Isn't there coffee every morning?
That's it. That's the best clip of John Goodman you can include for his birthday? That's the best?
Your coffee?
Isn't there coffee every morning?
There's more Roseanne Barr than there is John Goodman in that clip. Come on now. Give me a break. All right, so happy birthday, John Goodman. Oh, here's a couple of other local stories I wanted to get to. Tonight's show is a little weird because the Cardinals went into extra innings. We started late. I had a whole pile of things I wanted to get to, and two things I wanted to point out. One, you can find this one at KMOX.com. So the man charged in threat to kill at the St. Louis Pride Parade, there's a mugshot of him online right now at KMOX.com. So his name is Edward Terry. He's from Overland, 49 years old, charged Tuesday. And they say he's accused of telling organizers of the city's Pride Parade that he would shoot and kill as many gays as possible at the LGBTQ celebration before turning the gun on himself. Now he's been charged with making the terrorist threat, according to court documents. Let me point this out here. And for any knucklehead out there, I know that doesn't listen to this radio program. Obviously, we don't get knuckleheads that listen to this. But I'll point this out. Court documents say that he created a fake email account, sent a message to one of the Pride planners saying that he was going to take his guns and, you know, do this. And then it was directed to the FBI, who immediately tracked him down. It was zero effort to track down this idiot. So anyone that's stupid enough to make threats or do things like this, let me tell you this. Police are going to find you, and you're going to be done. It's over with. I don't know, understand what is wrong with certain people that they would even think this way, to even try to attempt to think this way, and to say that they're going to carry out something pretty terrible, act of violence. And let me point this one out, too. So let me go over to the News Ledger, and I think this is over in Jefferson City. So a man was sentenced to 5 years probation after he admitted to having sex with an 11-year-old girl. 5 years probation, no jail time. How does that make any sense? So I read this, and either he has the best lawyer money can buy, or they just completely duped the court system. His name is Joseph Meili, M-E-I-L-I, Joseph Meili, 22 years old, pled guilty to third-degree child molestation. The conviction could go off his record after those 5 years probation if he stays clean. So court documents say that he met a girl on an online dating site, arranged to meet her in person. A sexual encounter ensued. This is in 2017. His attorney, Scott Pearson, said the girl told Meili she was 18 years old. Is there any possible way a grown adult, male over the age of 20, can mistake a 11-year-old for an 18-year-old? That's a 7-year difference. Are you serious? I think he was purposely ignoring a certain fact or two, thinking that, you know, his perverse mind was going to get away with something here. So court documents say the girl told authorities about meeting up with him, and then she later tested positive for chlamydia. Originally, he was charged with several felonies, including kidnapping, statutory sodomy, and statutory rape. And his lawyer, this is what his lawyer argued, that he was essentially catfished. he was the victim lured in to believe the girl was 18. And he just felt horrible after committing statutory sodomy and statutory rape to an 11-year-old. He felt just so embarrassed and terrible about the whole thing when he found out she was 11. Is anyone buying that? Why do the courts buy things like this? So he gets 5 years probation. He gets no jail time. When he lured, no, he met this girl on a dating site. She's 11. You know, she can't just giddy up and go. It's not like she has a driver's license. There had to have been some way to get her into a certain spot, transport her, do these certain things. It's sad. It's sad. Judge Kelvin Holdson sentenced him to probation, despite the state asking that he be sent to prison for a 120-day program. It's not even like 120 days is nothing compared. 120, it's a long time, but not really. It's about, what, 4 months? 4 months. But I guess that was just too much for Jefferson City. Come on now. The lawyer for this person, Joseph Miele, said, I think this is a just outcome. He will be required to register as a sex offender as part of his plea. Yikes. No, I'll tell you that people that are going online looking for sexual encounters, they only have one thing in mind, is the encounter, right? Obviously, you can tell the difference between an 11-year-old and an 18-year-old. When you go online and that's all you're doing is trying to solicit someone for that encounter, for that feeling, for that moment, whatever it is, you know, if she's, let's just say she did say she was 18. By the time you met her, you should have known better. And it should have immediately a red flag should have popped up and you should have said, maybe this isn't a good idea. But unfortunately, the way these sites are designed and the way some people's minds are designed, once they have the, you know, they're all clear, laws, forget it. Doesn't matter. It's sad. It's, you know, it's sad. And I don't know. It just boggles my mind why some people get away with certain things. I don't know. This is Overnight America, KMOX. Overnight America continues for about a half hour or so. And we keep the phone lines open. That means you are invited to call. You don't need a reason other than wanting to bring up something we're talking about. 436-7900 or 800-925-1120. Let me bring this up, and this is at KMOX.com. Michael Calhoun wrote this up. It's an exclusive to KMOX, which is pretty neat. So when you are watching these television shows that are crime-fighting shows and they're trying to catch the perpetrator and there's this big manhunt going on, you always see these shows bring up some pretty futuristic technology. Like, they'll show them back in the main central lab, and here's a bit of audio, and they'll say, can you isolate just that person's talking? And they'll go click, 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 and then you'll hear only that one voice. They're like, wow, isn't that amazing you can do that? Well, that sort of technology doesn't exist, right? There are some audio forensic people that could process and have a specialty to try to draw out certain things in audio, but it's not like you press one button and it's done, right? It's not, you're setting it and forgetting it, like the old infomercials, you have a overnight toaster oven or whatever, set it and forget it, or the crock pots. It's not like that. And same thing with video surveillance. You know, they put this up and they say, okay, ooh, now hack into this person's surveillance camera. Now go to this angle. Now can we reverse it? Can we turn it over this way? Can you do 360? Can you do this and do that? Well, there's one company that actually wants to try to make that a real thing. And they want to test it out in St. Louis for free. You can find that story. There's three cities being considered: St. Louis, Chicago, and Baltimore. So this is what Michael Calhoun writes up. It says, it sounds like out of a TV drama. A call comes in for a shooting. Police rewind satellite imagery to the time of the crime and then watch where the suspect would come and go. This is actually really cool technology, all things considered. Very useful when it comes to trying to solve crimes. And this type of technology has existed in the past, but it's just something that's very difficult to implement because you're talking about, well, surveilling an entire large area like St. Louis and St. Louis County or whatever it is, even if it was just St. Louis. So this is what it does. So essentially, it sends back images that look like Google Earth images, It's a company called Persistent Surveillance Systems. It runs 24/7. They have the satellites constantly monitoring, constantly recording. And what happens is if they find out there's a shooting and they kind of get an idea of what time it was, they can look at that area at that time and continue to look at their imagery or their video, whatever it is, in real time, watch the video back as they track where that person went afterwards. So it could be a car, could be a person, and then they can eventually catch up to real time and get an idea maybe better of how that crime was committed, where that person went after, and get some better leads that way. And it's a system that costs about $2 million a year, but he says that there's a donor willing to foot the bill for a high crime city for 3 years. So that's a $6 million donation in order to test it out here in St. Louis, Missouri. I got some pros and cons for this, but what do you think? Do you think we should be pushing to get this sort of program here in our area? 436-7900 is the number, or 800-925-1120. So there's a few things that I think we could bring up to this. Number one, I think if we were to try to implement something like this, we have to put some safeguards into the law, right? There has to be some sort of limitations to how this technology could be used. You can't just say unlimited use for police to do whatever they want with this sort of thing. So they're not going out there hassling people for, you know, they're just out there to try to find crimes being committed as opposed to crimes that have been committed. So, for example, I hear about certain neighborhoods or certain communities, and there's so many different municipalities where police will go around and they'll see a car parked in the driveway. And if they see an expired tag, they'll write you a ticket for a car that's parked in your driveway. They're just out there looking for reasons to write tickets. You know, that's not good. You hear certain communities where... And there was this one, I think it was in St. Charles, I did that story, where, you know, if a crime's committed or whatever, they'll go door to door and they'll open up car doors looking for things, you know. Yeah, some things are a little bit more proactive, and you got to be careful for those. Like, you don't want this satellite imagery being used for tracking speeders. So if someone's going down the freeway and they're going five over, and this satellite could determine through their calculations that this person was going five over, then they're going to use it as a way to try to get your license plate, ding you, and send you a ticket through the mail, like a way around the red lights. Remember those red light cameras that are still installed but are not being used, thanks to our very own Charlie Brennan? There's certain limitations that you have to put in this and safeguards that you have to put in. So, but in general, if we could put the ground rules down, as in, okay, here's the instances where something like this could be used. Obviously, if there's a violent crime that was committed, a shooting, a stabbing, you know, even hit and runs, things like that, where people were injured. Or Amber Alerts, let's say there was a child that was grabbed and they can track the car from the child that was grabbed. They can get better information of where that person may be going. These are all awesome uses of this technology. And I think that would be awesome to have. It would be such a great tool for the police that have already been stretched so thin they can't get onto the street enough because they're understaffed. And even though they are understaffed, they're still trying to focus on certain areas, but there's all kinds of different areas that have problems in the city of St. Louis that they can't watch at all. Plus, it would actually have some video evidence that they'd be able to take because the prosecutor and the people here in the circuit attorney in St. Louis, well, they don't seem to want to actually bring cases against people that commit these sort of crimes, sometimes because they have their own personal political motivations or whatever it is. It's going to be a little bit harder to ignore this sort of thing if you got video evidence, okay? So get all these things in line. Get it going, man. Let's hope St. Louis gets something like this. But I would encourage all the lawmakers to put some ground rules in. What do you think? Would you like to be constantly monitored from the sky if you know this is the way it'll be used? I think it might be worth the risk. Now, normally I would not be in favor of government surveillance, but I think with the proper safeguards, this would be extremely effective because, man, this can't hurt right now in St. Louis. You're telling me there could be something out there that would help track people that have committed. Well, like, how many shootings have we had? We look at these homicide rates that continue to rise. It's higher than it was this time last year in 2018. And we've even seen some portions of the city take a break for a little while. I mean, the St. Louis Blues win the Stanley Cup. We have a celebration. People are taking a break from doing things like that. But then it picks right back up. We've had some gang violence. We have people on the street doing things that are terrible to each other. If it's not shootings, It could be stabbings. It could be hit and runs. It could be, you know, arson. It could be all these different things. If we can do anything that could minimize that, that would be a good thing. It really would be. You know, Chicago and Baltimore, Chicago, they got the money. They tax their people enough, right? They got their own issues. They're already in debt. They got all these problems. You know, they can afford this sort of thing if they really wanted to do a pilot program like this. Baltimore, I can see also using it. St. Louis and Baltimore are in very similar situations. But, you know, bring it to St. Louis. It's more fun here. Yeah, we got more things going for us. Do that, please. 314-436-7900 is the number. Or 800-925-1120. We are eyed as a test market for aerial crime surveillance technology. I wonder how that would actually work. It's not easy to keep a drone or satellites constantly running and in tune with the area. I mean, even the satellites that you see from Google, it's pretty impressive the things they're able to do. But to constantly have one dedicated for this area, it's tough. You know, it's not an easy thing. I'm impressed that that is even possible, to tell you the truth. This is Overnight America, KMOX. Overnight America, we continue here. All right, well, you could go to bed, and by the time you wake up, there could be action taken against Iran. You never know how that's going to work out. So let's rewind, because there is some news coming in that a U.S. Navy drone in international airspace was shot down by Iranian missile. E-boy. So let's back up. Let's already look at how Iran is in some trouble because, as you remember, not that long ago, there was a U.S. Navy, well, I guess there was an attack on two tankers in the Gulf of Oman, and it was all signs point to Iran. It's not a coincidence that Iran and the United States don't get along. Iran is not a trustworthy country. And even CBS News, their correspondent, has done a report on this, and this leads up to what just happened not that long ago.
We headed out to sea on U.S. Navy gunboats to see up close for the first time the crime scene at the center of a crisis that's edging the U.S. and Iran closer to open conflict. U.S. Fifth Fleet forces patrol these waters, the most strategic and vulnerable oil shipping lane in the world. We've been shown explosive fragments and a magnet left behind from an undetonated mine described as bearing a striking resemblance to limpet mines used by Iran.
Yeah, and they have other evidence and things that they're looking at that was left over from this. And it's not the first time. We already saw missiles from Iran when it came to Israel and some of these different attacks that have been done in the past and to our allies. Now, here's the latest. And Fox News is now reporting this. Apparently, the U.S. has confirmed that a high-altitude drone was shot down by Iranian surface-to-air missile over international airspace. And this is just a week after what we saw those attacks on those two oil tankers that point back to Iran as well. So the U.S. Central Command spokesperson declined to comment on the reported attack, but reached by the AP, he said no drone was over Iranian territory. And now, according to ABC, that was Fox News' report, ABC confirms that the U.S. government said this drone was shot down. So the U.S. said Iran fired a missile at another drone last week that responded to the attack of two oil tankers near the Gulf. So if you want to goat the United States into starting a new conflict with you, this is how you do it. So you got President Trump in there, who's not going to take this lightly, and it means no funny business on something like this. You already have pretty strong evidence that Iran has attacked these two oil tankers. Now you have United States drones that are being shot down out of the air, and all signs point to Iran and from a surface-to-air missile. What do you think the president's going to do about something like this? We already pulled support for Iran, and we said we're not abiding by a regulation during the Obama administration that they weren't abiding by anyway. And we're just going to, what, find more ways to ignore Iran, or are we going to eventually do something about it? This is what's pushing here. Now, let me put it this way, too. We're coming into an election year, okay? We're coming into an election year, and when we were talking about the reparations and the Democrats, here's everyone's got to grab onto their one thing. Oh, I'm going to grab on to open borders, and I want minimum wage, and I want free tuition, and I want free health care, and I want reparations. I want this. I want that. All the Democrats are figuring out how they're going to carve their way into the American public and to try to get a couple extra percentage points. What do you think the easiest thing for President Trump's going to do? Number one, negotiate with Mexico and try to get something going on in immigration. Either he gets ICE out there and starts to find people that have overstayed their visas or had these deportation orders and finally follow through on these deportation orders. Okay? That could be one way to get his fan base. That's the one way he can get the voter base going. The second thing is, well, if Iran is shooting down our drones and they're shooting down oil tankers and Iran is not friendly, Iran is not an ally of ours, and Iran has also been hostile to our allies that are in that area. Okay, they're going to start shooting our stuff out of the air? What do you think we're going to do? You think that the base that sees that as a threat and doesn't trust Iran to begin with? Let's say the president goes out there and actually has some sort of military action or bombing or whatever it is against Iran to try to set this straight because, number one, they can't be trusted, but number two, they're actually taking physical violence against our stuff and our people. Okay, the president goes and actually starts something with Iran. What do you think that's going to do to most of the people that are here in the United States? Well, you got the different voter base out there that doesn't like the idea of getting into another war, but when you're provoked and you have missiles being shot at you, guess what? They all of a sudden get on the same page and they say, you got to do something about this. So, yeah, go ahead. Democrats, continue to try to push, oh, we got to have free health care for everyone and free college education and reparations and all of these things that you'll never follow through on. Go ahead and keep banging that drum. President Trump's going to go out there. He's going to defend this country against Iran after they've already started to attack us. What do you think that's going to do for the 2020 election? That's a no-brainer. So President Trump's, I think, looking for the opportunity. We're spending more money on defense. We're upgrading our defense. I think he's looking for the opportunity to stop Iran in their tracks before it gets any worse. What do you think is going to happen next, honestly? So, you know, you could fall asleep and tomorrow wake up and find out what you've had. A military strike against strategic points of Iran. We already got the, you know, after this whole thing happened, we've already seen some of these tankers get attacked. We've already started to send our warships out that way. We're already starting to get strategically in place. We're already keeping an eye on Iran. You know, that's what the progression is. If they want to keep shooting things down, that's how you start something. If you want to start something with the United States, that's how you start something with the United States. So that's now breaking through the overnight here. And we don't know exactly where it's going to go. You know, may sit on it for a little while. May wait, may not. But if you have these two events that happen right next to each other, it's going to be hard to ignore that. Very hard to ignore that. We'll keep an eye out, and who knows, maybe something will break by the time Total Information AM opens back up this morning. You know, how about we end the show on a best of Kevin Colleen? I think he's out on vacation this week. Whenever he's out on vacation, they put the best of together, and the whole nother stories he puts together are timeless. I love them. Here's one from who knows when, but it's still a oldie but goodie.
Some phone numbers you never forget.
Do you remember your childhood phone number when you were a boy and you had to call your home number?
Yeah.
What was it?
Sterling 12266.
Sterling?
Yep.
What's Sterling?
ST.
I think it was Jefferson 12222 or something like
Jefferson?
That. Mm-hmm.
How many phone numbers have you got rattling around in your head?
Probably a couple hundred. I've got a good memory for numbers.
All right.
I still remember my first wife's number from 30 years ago in Topeka, Kansas.
What was it?
266-4550.
When was the last time you called her?
Probably 30 years ago, 30, 40 years.
But not everybody can remember those long ago numbers.
Think now. Think. Imagine you're a little girl and you have to call mom and you're picking up the phone. It's a rotary phone, hard plastic. You're getting ready to dial. What's the number home?
I honestly don't remember.
Do you remember a lot of phone numbers?
I do not.
How many total you think you got in your mind?
Two.
One lady seemed to remember her long ago phone number by singing it.
Probably the one I was raised growing up with.
What was that?
314-771-2770.
And you say it with a melody in your voice. Is that how you remembered it?
Yeah, it was easy to remember.
Yeah. Are you married?
I am.
Do you remember your wife's phone number when you were dating her? She was your fiance?
No. No. I may have repressed that.
Do you know your wife's phone number now?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, altogether, how
I'm
many...
I'm not going to give that up.
Sure. Okay. But altogether, how many phone numbers would you estimate you've committed to memory?
Oh... Hard to tell. Between 5 and 10, I think.
That's not a lot
for
Western civilization.
Well, and I'm just lucky to be here, you know.
Most people say they only remember the phone numbers of a few loved ones, their childhood phone number, and some important business phone numbers.
If you wanted to order a pizza right now, do you know a pizza number?
Yeah. I know several of them. I work at a pizza place.
With a whole nother story, I'm Kevin Killeen.
It's not bad. Another great Kevin Killeen, whole nother story. I got a couple of phone numbers I have memorized. I have my parents' number, which they've had forever. I have my grandmother's number. She's since passed, and I'll tell you, that was a very difficult thing for my mom to give up. It was the number she grew up with. You know, she had that number for decades and for the longest time. And I still remember it, and I've still been tempted to call it just to see what would happen. But ever since she passed, you know, 4.5, 5 years ago, well, 5 years ago now, coming up this summer, it's been 5 years. My mom tried to keep it along for a while. Not that we needed the number, but she had a hard time disconnecting herself from that because it was, you know, like a disconnection from her mother. So I remember that one. I know the radio station number at 436-7900. I know 800-925-1120. I remember a couple of old radio station numbers, but that's about it. Well, my wife's number, I know that too. So I guess I might have 10 numbers total memorized. It's a good question. How many do you have memorized? At Ryan Recker on Twitter. I'll be back again tomorrow night after Cardinals baseball. Have a good one. We'll see you.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.